Chapter 47. Confounded thing turned up, and down went my heart into my boots. But there was now no excuse, so I went solidly to work, tore up a great part of the MS written in Heidelberg, wrote and tore up, continued to write and tear up, and at last, reward of patient and noble persistence, my pen got the old swing again. Since then I'm glad Providence knew better what to do with the Swiss notebook than I did, for I like my work now, exceedingly, and often turn out over 30 MS pages a day, and then quit sorry that heaven makes the day so short. One of my discouragements had been the belief that my interest in this tour had been so slender that I couldn't gouge matter enough out of it to make a book. What a mistake! I've got 900 pages written, not a word in it about the sea voyage, yet I stepped my foot out of Heidelberg for the first time yesterday, and then only to take our party of four on our first pedestrian tour to Heilbronn. I've got them dressed elaborately in walking costume knapsacks, canteens, field glasses, leather leggings, patent walking shoes, muslin folds around their hats, with long tails hanging down behind, sun umbrellas, and alpenstocks. They go all the way to Wimpfen by rail thence to Heilbronn in a chance vegetable cart drawn by a donkey and a cow. I shall fetch them home on a raft, and if other people shall perceive that that was no pedestrian excursion, they themselves shall not be conscious of it. This trip will take 100 pages or more, oh, goodness knows how many. For the mood is everything, not the material, and I already seem to see 300 pages rising before me on that trip. Then, I propose to leave Heidelberg for good. Don't you see, the book, 1800 MS pages, may really be finished before I ever get to Switzerland? But there's one thing I want to tell Frank Bliss and his father to be charitable toward me in. That is, let me tear up all the MS I want to, and give me time to write more. I shan't waste the time. I haven't the slightest desire to loaf, but a consuming desire to work, ever since I got back my swing. And you see, this book is either going to be compared with The Innocents Abroad, or contrasted with it, to my disadvantage. I think I can make a book that will be no dead corpse of a thing, and I mean to do my level best to accomplish that. My crude plans are crystallizing. As the thing stands now, I went to Europe for three purposes. The first you know, and must keep secret, even from the Blisses. The second is to study art, and the third to acquire a critical knowledge of the German language. My MS already shows that the two latter objects are accomplished. It shows that I am moving about as an artist and a philologist, and unaware that there is any immodesty in assuming these titles. Having three definite objects has had the effect of seeming to enlarge my domain and give me the freedom of a loose costume. It is three strings to my bow to. Well, your butcher is magnificent. He won't stay out of my mind. I keep trying to think of some way of getting your account of him into my book without his being offended, and yet confound him, there isn't anything you have said which he would see any offense in. I'm only thinking of his friends. They are the parties who busy themselves with seeing things for people. But I'm bound to have him in. I'm putting in the yarn about the Limburger cheese and the box of guns. Two mighty glad owls declined it. It seems to gather richness and flavor with age. I have very nearly killed several companies with that narrative, the American Artists Club, here, for instance, and Smith and Wife and Miss Griffith, they were here in this house a week or two. I've got other chapters that pretty nearly destroyed the same parties too. Oh, Switzerland, the further it recedes into the enriching haze of time, the more intolerably delicious the charm of it, and the cheer of it, and the glory and majesty and solemnity and pathos of it grow. Those mountains had a soul, they thought, they spoke, one couldn't hear it with the ears of the body, but what a voice it was! And how real! Deep down in my memory it is sounding yet. Alp calleth unto Alp. That stately old scriptural wording is the right one for God's Alps and God's ocean. How puny we were in that awful presence, and how painless it was to be so. How fitting and right it seemed, and how stingless was the sense of our unspeakable insignificance. And Lord, how pervading were the repose and peace and blessedness that poured out of the heart of the invisible great spirit of the mountains. Now what is it? There are mountains and mountains and mountains in this world, but only these take you by the heartstrings. I wonder what the secret of it is. Well, time and time again it has seemed to me that I must drop everything and flee to Switzerland once more. It is a longing, a deep, strong, tugging longing, that is the word. We must go again, Joe. October days, let us get up at dawn and breakfast at the tower. I should like that first rate. Livy and all of us send deluges of love to you, and Harmony and all the children. I dreamed last night that I woke up in the library at home, and your children were frolicking around me, and Julia was sitting in my lap. You and Harmony and both families of Warners had finished their welcomes, and were filing out through the conservatory door, wrecking Patrick's flower pots with their dress skirts as they went. Peace and plenty abide with you all. Mark. I want the Blisses to know their part of this letter, if possible. They will see that my delay was not from choice. Following the life of Mark Twain, whether through his letters or along the sequence of detailed occurrence, we are never more than a little while, or a little distance, from his brother Orion. In one form or another, Orion is ever present. His inquiries, his proposals, his suggestions, his plans for improving his own fortunes, command our attention. He was one of the most human creatures that ever lived. Indeed, his humanity excluded every form of artificiality, everything that needs to be acquired. Talented, trusting, childish-like, carried away by the impulse of the moment, despite a keen sense of humor, he was never able to see that his latest plan or project was not bound to succeed. Mark Twain loved him, pitied him, also enjoyed him, especially with Howells. Orion's new plan to lecture in the interest of religion found its way to Munich, with the following result. To W.D. Howells, in Boston. Munich, February 9, 1879. My dear Howells, I have just received this letter from Orion. Take care of it, for it is worth preserving. I got as far as 9 pages in my answer to it, when Mrs. Clemens shut down on it, and said it was cruel, and made me send the money, and simply wish his lecture success. I said I couldn't lose my 9 pages, so she said, send them to you. But I will acknowledge that I thought I was writing a very kind letter. Now just look at this letter of Orion's. Did you ever see the grotesquely absurd, and the heartbreakingly pathetic more closely joined together? Mrs. Clemens said, ace his monthly pension. So I wrote to Perkins, to raise it a trifle. Now only think of it. He still has 100 pages to write on his lecture, yet in one inking of his pen he has already swooped around the United States, and invested the result. You must put him in a book or a play right away. You are the only man capable of doing it. You might die at any moment, and your very greatest work would be lost to the world. I could write Orion's simple biography, and make it effective too, by merely stating the bald facts, and this, I will do, if he dies before I do. But you must put him into romance. This was the understanding you and I had the day I sailed. Observe Orion's career, that is, a little of it. 1. He has belonged to as many as 5 different religious denominations. Last March he withdrew from the deaconship in a congregational church, and the superintendency of its Sunday school, in a speech in which he said that for many months, it runs in my mind, that he said 13 years, he had been a confirmed infidel, and so felt it to be his duty to retire from the flock. 2. After being a Republican for years, he wanted me to buy him a Democratic newspaper. A few days before the presidential election, he came out in a speech and publicly went over to the Democrats. He prudently edged by voting for 6 state Republicans, also. The new convert was made one of the secretaries of the Democratic meeting and placed in the list of speakers. He wrote me jubilantly of what a 10-strike he was going to make with that speech. All right, but think of his innocent and pathetic candor in writing me something like this, a week later. I was more diffident than I had expected to be, and this was increased by the silence with which I was received when I came forward, so I seemed unable to get the fire into my speech which I had calculated upon, and presently they began to get up and go out, and in a few minutes they all rose up and went away. How could a man uncover such a sore as that, and show it to another? Not a word of complaint, you see only a patient, sad surprise. 3. His next project was to write a burlesque upon Paradise Lost. 4. Then, learning that the Times was paying Art $100 a column for stories, he concluded to write some for the same price. I read his first one, and persuaded him not to write any more. 5. Then he read proof on the yen. Why, Eve? Post at $10 a week and meekly observed that the foreman swore at him and ordered him around like a steamboat mate. 6. Being discharged from that post, he wanted to try agriculture, was sure he could make a fortune out of a chicken farm. I gave him $900 and he went to a 10-house village a miles above Keokuk on the river bank. This place was a railway station. He soon asked for money to buy a horse and light wagon, because the trains did not run at church time on Sunday, and his wife found it rather far to walk. For a long time I answered demands for owns, and by next mail always received his check for the interest due me to date. In the most guileless way he let it leak out that he did not underestimate the value of his custom to me, since it was not likely that any other customer of mine paid his interest quarterly, and this enabled me to use my capital twice in 6 months instead of only once. But alas, when the debt at last reached $1,800, or $2,500, I have forgotten which, the interest ate too formidably into his borrowings, and so he quietly ceased to pay it, or speak of it. At the end of 2 years I found that the chicken farm had long ago been abandoned, and he had moved into Keokuk. Later in one of his casual moments, he observed that there was no money in fattening a chicken on 65 cents worth of corn, and then selling it for 50. 7. Finally, if I would lend him $500 a year for 2 years, this was 4 or 5 years ago, he knew he could make a success as a lawyer, and would prove it. This is the pension which we have just increased to $600. The first year his legal business brought him $5. It also brought him an unremunerative case, where some villains were trying to chouse some Negro orphans out of $700. He still has this case. He has waggled it around through various courts, and made some booming speeches on it. The Negro children have grown up and married off now, I believe, and their litigated town lot has been dug up and carted off by somebody, but Orion still infests the courts with his documents, and makes the welkin ring with his venerable case. The second year, he didn't make anything. The third he made $6, and I made Bliss put a case in his hands about half an hour's work. Orion charged $50 for it, Bliss paid him $15. Thus 4 or 5 years of laving has brought him $26, but this will doubtless be increased when he gets done lecturing and buys that library. Meantime his office rent has been $60 a year, and he has stuck to that lair day by day as patiently as a spider. 8. Then he by and by conceived the idea of lecturing around America as Mark Twain's brother, that to be on the bills. Subject of proposed lecture, on the formation of character. 9. I protested, and he got on his warpend, couched his lance, and ran a bold tilt against total abstinence and the red ribbon fanatics. It raised a fine row among the virtuous Keokukians. 10. I wrote to encourage him in his good work, but I had let a mail intervene. So by the time my letter reached him, he was already winning laurels as a red ribbon howler. 11. Afterward he took a rabid part in a prayer meeting epidemic. Dropped that to travesty Jules Verne. Dropped that, in the middle of the last Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.